and welcome to IRI Growth Insights, featuring IRI thought leaders, industry partners, and guests. For more than 40 years, IRI has been known for its invaluable data, but these podcasts delve into the insights the data reveal to fuel market disruption and market growth for those in the CPG, retail, healthcare, and media markets. I'm your host, Joan Driggs, coming to you from my home in the greater Chicago area. In this special episode of IRI Growth Insights, recorded on April 6th, 2020, we're discussing COVID-19 and its impact on the CPG and retail industries. For daily updates on consumer reaction, real-time data on product categories, as well as insights and implications to the CPG retail industry, I encourage you to visit IRIWorldwide.com to see the IRI COVID-19 dashboard, powered by IRI Liquid Data. At the same location, you'll find a number of COVID-19 reports that provide valuable information across countries, categories, and channels. Hello, and welcome to Understanding CPG and Retail Supply Chain in a COVID-19 World. Today, I'm joined by IRI colleagues Scott Love and Teresa Scheingraber, both principals of Retail Client Solutions here at IRI. Today, we're going to be talking about the current situation, what it looks like as we emerge from COVID-19, and what our new normal is going to look like in terms of supply chain. And I'd like to have each Teresa and Scott say a few words because I know that their popularity has risen incrementally as friends and family try and learn about what's happening, particularly like with a run on toilet paper. So Teresa, I'm going to start with you. Do you want to just say where you're from and what your current situation is? Because you're as much a victim of supply chain as the rest of us.
Absolutely. So I am currently working from home in Boise, Idaho, with my kids doing remote schooling. This is their first week for that. So that's definitely been an adjustment for all of us. I think the biggest thing is we are healthy and thankful of everybody in both the CPG and the retail organizations that are just being that frontline helper. And I think for me, one of the biggest adjustments is now supply chain, which I always say is the silent industry. Nobody knows what we do because you only hear about us when there's a problem. And so now I feel like we're the popular kid on the block. Everybody is asking, providing advice, becoming an expert in supply chain in an industry that right now is 24/7 in many different ways. So for me, I think it's just been helping to provide calm and reason when people ask what's happening, what should I get? And it's really more just taking a deep breath and waiting. The supply chain is working, and just give us time and it will go back to where it should be.
Well, I hope that your popularity remains high when your cocktail hours are no longer virtual, but real. So welcome.
Absolutely.
And Scott, how about you? Where are you?
Similar. So working from home in Boise, Idaho as well. And I echo Teresa's sentiments. Thankful for all of those in the CPG industry working on the front lines and ensuring that products are getting through the pipeline as well as healthcare workers and the like. So I've been hearing from a number of friends and family asking about when particular products will be in stores and where they can find them and when things will get back to normal.
And what do you tell them?
Patience. Patience is the key. Right now, we'll get into it. The biggest thing is that for many of these products, there's actually products in the pipeline. They're just not getting all the way to consumers. And as more frontline consumers either buy more than they typically do, due to concerns, it amplifies the issues or the gaps. And so things will get back to normal very soon. And as you look across, there's some interesting products that are spiking that are definitely more on the side of panic buying versus actual needs for the window of time.
Well, in fact, that's a pretty good place to start, I think, is talking about panic buying, because I think that from our data here at IRI, we pretty much look at March 13th as that high watermark. I think that things might have tipped a little bit in advance of that, but that March 13th is when we saw a huge spike in panic shopping. So can we even just a little refresh on some of those categories and, you know, what relief is looking like right now?
On March 13th, President Trump announced about COVID-19 and the impact of it. So there were several states that went into lockdown mode after that, as well as restrictions on having people fly to the U.S. from European countries. The following day, there was an impact on Dow Jones dropping 10%. And so that led to March 13th, which was the high water mark where people really nationally started realizing this was going to be a longer term event. And so went and purchased large amounts of a number of categories across the store. So interesting enough, so if you look at things like powdered milk, typically not a large seller, was blown out of stores immediately. Instant potatoes, anything paper, paper towels, toilet paper, which are still in a recovery method. And then anything cleaning, all natural cleaners, wipes, bleach, any of those things, hand sanitizers, antibacterial soaps, all of those things saw an immense spike that 13th. And still, many of those categories haven't rebounded with inventory. So there's still unmet consumer demand. So as those start flowing into stores, there's going to be some kind of aftershock from that effect of not having the product in the stores.
So are some of those products, though, making their way to the stores? I mean, you know, what does that look like? What does the flow look like from, you know, manufacturer to distribution centers to the store?
Yeah, so what manufacturers have done to date is they've consolidated the number of items they're manufacturing. So, for instance, a manufacturer of bath tissue may have been making 40 different SKUs previously and is now only making 6 or 7 SKUs so that they can make more product in a shorter amount of time. Yeah. And so what's happening right now is that those products exist ready to be bought, but they're either at the manufacturer warehouse or at the retailer warehouse. There's a physical limitation of the number of trucks, the amount of time it takes to get to all those different places, and then the amount of trucks that a retailer has to send to the stores. And what's happening, as soon as those items hit the shelf, they're being purchased very quickly. And so we're starting to see those things, in particular things like bath tissue, starting to show up into stores. They're still being grabbed very quickly by consumers, so it'll take a little bit of time for that to kind of normalize. But in general, many of those are kind of normalizing. I think that the next wave of concern, or one of the pieces of the next wave of concern, is that some of these manufacturers may see packaging concerns where they don't have enough packaging to actually package the products for retail.
Really? Like, so, you know, for example, like you're talking about like the plastic wrap around toilet paper or cans, canned goods.
Exactly. So paper, glass. Those, you know, typically those are bought well in advance based on forecasted demand. The demand has been excessive for some of these categories. And so the manufacturers, especially streamlining down to a limited number of SKUs. So now you're pushing much more volume through a given item than you ever would have forecast. And so those things take time. And the other risk is that those people that make the packaging may not have been deemed critical. So they may not be actually making goods right now. And so trying to get that through. In fact, in the UK right now, there's a problem with packaging for flour for retail. There's flour that's been milled, but they don't actually have the packaging to get it into stores. And so they're looking at things like maybe using the food service packaging, because that business has slowed down, and put those on shelves temporarily.
Right. So let's talk a little bit more about some of the workarounds for that. You know, how have you seen the industry, maybe Teresa, you could address this. How have you seen the industry pivot, you know, more along the lines of being like food service packaging or some other solution?
Right. I think there's been a number of different ways manufacturers have pivoted. So one that we've recently talked about is a little bit on changing the sizes. So instead of a small, medium, and large, you might just have one size. Or for toilet paper, you'll see now a lot of the products that are coming out will only have four rolls in them, and you're limited to one. We can then look at flour. I think this is a really interesting example that Scott had brought up. And what we've also seen is, for example, at least where we live, there's a local bakery that sells in the grocery stores. But now what they've started to do is they've started to sell their flours. So they've created packaging very quickly, and they are now selling the flour, which has been fantastic. It's a way a small manufacturer has been able to adapt quickly. Then you have the larger manufacturers that are also adapting in a different way. They're running their plants 24/7. They're limiting, like we said, the number of sizes. And they are working significantly closer with their retailers. So you might see a truck now that instead of delivering to a retailer distribution center, might just deliver directly to a store to get the product to the store faster.
So do we have any challenges? I mean, I know retailers in particular have been pretty transparent about ways that they're trying to keep their frontline people safe from, you know, COVID-19. In terms of supply chain, like, what are some of the things we don't see? You know, are there, you know, maybe things for drivers, or are they spacing them out at DCs for pickup? Like any insight there that you can provide?
Well, I think one of the first things is there is employee fatigue. Everybody is working so hard. But for many people, there's also the sense of pride. And yes, they're really making a difference. We are not seeing so much the trucks being spaced out at the DCs, frankly, because they're in a line already. But what we are seeing is the increased focus on safety for people, trying to take care of the individuals, and then rapid changes, whether those changes are a loosening up of regulations for carriers so that they can be on the road longer, to people delivering food to the truck drivers because they can't go through a drive-through. So what are they going to do? So creating different alternatives to that, then down to the grocery stores, and where we've all seen the plexiglass, or this week, a lot of the grocery stores are limiting the people and making the aisles one way as a way to really help drive the social distancing. So I would say that it's in the full supply chain, and it's just quickly adjusting by the different mode to make sure that everyone is safe and cared for.
You know, this is kind of an odd one, but I just saw over the weekend a really interesting map that showed where the movement of people, you know, around the country, and it's all based on tracking your cell phone. And I'm in the Great Lakes region, and the Great Lakes region was the one area that was like really hunkered down. Like, these are people who are staying home. We are not going to the store as best we can. But there are other areas where people are, you know, pretty much moving around as normal. And I'm wondering what that might be doing to for supply chain. Is there any way for manufacturers or even retailers to kind of, more national retailers, I guess, kind of reallocate some of their supplies based on maybe where outbreaks are occurring or where they know people are staying away from stores? Because we do have data that shows that a lot of, you know, like particularly in my area, sales are down because people already did the stock up.
National retailers are definitely allocating what they get, because they're not getting their full orders from a lot of these manufacturers. They're on allocation. And so what they're doing is they're prioritizing across their own stores and regions on places where the sales are going to be most impactful, where they can move those items as fast as possible. So there's definitely some of that going on. I think the other thing is, even in those places where people aren't moving a lot, they are purchasing things, right? They still have to eat. They still have to do all of that. And so it's that's where e-commerce comes into play. also, I think we know that several retailers have played with the idea of actually putting some of their stores as dark stores in some of these areas where they close them from people walking in, but they have click and collect or drive up and go or buy online, pick up in store, whatever you want to call it, where you order online and then you pick it up, or delivery from those stores. And basically you turn your whole parking lot and the store itself, you put inventory down all the aisles and you allocate all of your labor versus running the store. You're solely focused on picking orders and getting them out either to delivery or in the parking lot.
That is fascinating. I had not heard that at all. That's very cool. I kind of like some of these interesting pivots, you know, that we're hearing about. So, kind of moving from the here and now a little bit into as things are progressing, and I know this isn't necessarily when we're into recession for COVID, but coming up, you know, we're coming up on some spring holidays, including Easter and Passover. What do you anticipate is going to happen with that? Because we're not going to be seeing the big family gatherings in the coming weeks.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a trade-off, right? I think people are going to treat it very differently. I think you still may see things like ham, or like there still may be a meal that's celebratory for the people there, but there will not be the Easter egg hunts and the large family gatherings that it typically exist. And so categories like holiday candy, you can expect to see a decline. In fact, I think there's a lot of concern wrapped around that. And that creates another problem from a supply chain logistics standpoint is you have all of these goods that are into these stores that are expected to turn. If those don't turn, then you have to package those up and send those back. But your trucks are already full because they're going to another store after. So how do you actually move that product out? And then you have the next holiday coming in, which is typically is a pretty clean transition. This year, it gets much more complicated than a typical year.
And really, I think that a lot of those orders, even for you know, the holidays to come, like Memorial Day, those were placed long ago, right?
Oh, yeah. Those were placed 6 months to a year ago. And so all those plans are in place. And, you know, clearly Memorial Day has a very high likelihood of being a very different holiday this year than it typically is.
Interesting.
And I think one of the other challenges is going to be displays and promotions and how do we manage all of the expectations around that, because we may or may not have the product for those planned promotions. Those promotions may be canceled. And it is, we've talked about, it's just, it's a different emotion in general. You are maybe a little bit less celebratory at this time.
Yeah, well, certainly. I mean, I think that any household with, you know, even single people, single person households, you know, now with video chat and stuff, people still, I think to Scott's point, want to acknowledge these holidays as best they can. But we don't know what it's going to look like. You know, it might even be taking one part of something and having somebody else do the other part. It'll be interesting. We'll circle back on that one for sure. So let's talk a little bit about how we're going to be changing business practices and things as we do emerge from COVID. Like, you know, this is such a challenging time, but what are some of the opportunities for retailers or manufacturers as we kind of come out of this?
So for me, I think one of the most important things is to take that deep breath, relook at your supply chain, and look at your inventory. And there's going to be a lot of focus on inventory accuracy right now, both at the manufacturers, at the distribution centers, and at the retailers, because everybody has been moving so quickly to get product out that we're going to have to take a step back and say, okay, what product do we have? What do we have on order? Do we really have those 5 units of that flour on this on the shelf anymore? Because we'll have to go out and really count them. We're going to have to go look at our planograms and make sure that they're a bit more accurate. And then we're going to have to look at the baseline, because we do think that once this is over, the normal demand for many products might be higher For some, it might be lower, but it might be higher. People are going to say, wow, you know, I tried this this product for the first time during the COVID situation, and I actually like it. Or I do like to cook, so maybe I'm going to go out to restaurants a little bit less often. So I think there's going to be a lot of changes that we're going to have to analyze.
You know, I do think that people are going to be anxious to get out a little bit more, but I think I agree with you that people are also going to be wary. You know, that trust, first of all, it's not going to be a light switch. You know, we're not going to just go out some Tuesday and everything's going to be back to normal. You know, again, the food service supply chain, the labor, everything needs to be put back in place. But I think that people will, first of all, we're going to be in an economic downfall for sure. So things are going to be tight. People want to achieve some sense of normalcy as best they can, but I don't think we're really ready to jump back into having half of that food dollar go outside the home again. And to your point, you know, these things have been planned a year or more in advance, and now you're adding in like the challenge of accuracy problems or accuracy issues. So what's a retailer to do? I mean, they can't get more product after they've already ordered it, not in this day and age. So what is that? What are some of the alternatives for them?
Yeah, so I think a couple things there. I think we can expect retailers to shuffle their displays, right, as some of these high demand items come back into stock. You could expect that retailers will use those displays for the critical items versus maybe what was planned to be on there. And then you can also expect retailers to assess the business need. A couple things. One, they're going to target all of the shoppers that they acquired during this period of time and actively work on retaining them. And then secondarily, going into a recession, coming out of this, you're going to see some retailers potentially look at their assortment and change it quite dramatically, right? One of the things we've seen here is that the long tail has really dropped off in these critical areas. And I think you're going to have both retailers and manufacturers potentially assess how much value there is in the end of that tail. And so as a manufacturer, maybe you have 100 items in your portfolio, and maybe coming out of this, you decide to go back to 80 because those deliver the most value and most revenue and most profit to you. And retailers may do something similar. They may decide that having more holding power of a given item is more valuable than having another item in that particular stocking section.
That's interesting. Well, I mean, because, you know, when we were in the last recession, we definitely saw consumers make a good switch over to private label products. And since then, retailers have really invested heavily. Well, a lot of retailers have really invested heavily and have very nice tiered, you know, assortments of private brand products. But at the same time, I mean, do you think it can be even more so? You know, you think that retailers want even more of that?
Well, I think what's happened in the market since the last recession is there's been a general premiumization across the store, even within private labels. Some retailers are overbalanced on premium private label items. And so what you're going to do is you're going to see retailers try and quickly develop, as well as manufacturers, quickly develop value products with the attributes such as organic or nutritional that consumers are looking for. And so you're going to be seeing those categories today that exist in a premium product portfolio transition and have additional SKUs pop up that are more value oriented.
I love that. Sticking to the attributes that shoppers are kind of gravitating towards anyway.
Yeah.
So Teresa, you had mentioned that, you know, there's a good opportunity, you know, not just for new buyers, but for some different products, you know, maybe products that are smaller, lesser known brands or have less household penetration. What does it look like for those companies in the near future?
I think for those companies, it's probably mixed. It can be a very exciting time because they can be very fast and they can be very limber and they can potentially react. But I think the other thing is just making sure that you take a look at your cash to cash cycle, make sure that you're viable. And make sure that you're working with the retailer right now on a in a collaborative way. When you are small, you can come with your solutions often faster. And the retailers right now are so busy that they really appreciate someone who comes in with the facts, comes in with the data and says, this is what we can do. This is where we can get it. And then drive that action.
Kind of like your flour, your baker, your local baker.
Right. Exactly. Like they came in quickly and they came in with a great packaging and it's easy and it's clear and it solves the problem. And I think what's very interesting is you now have a fantastic product. When this is over, do you keep them in the store?
Well, and you know, a lot of people are making more now than they did a few months ago. That's for sure.
Absolutely. I was looking on our on the IRI COVID site this week, and some of the top selling categories are now yeast and flour. And this was different than, of course, a week or two ago. Part of it was because the product wasn't in stock, but it's also because we're baking more. You're making those cookies at home and you're creating a more comforting environment.
Yep. So you've presented us with a lot of different things that, you know, retailers are going to have to look at: assortment, their commitment to their private brand, even how they're going to be merchandising, lots and lots of decisions. What is something that you would recommend a retailer, like what is one of the first recommendations that you would make for retailers? Here's what you need to tackle first.
It is accuracy. For me, it's the focus on supply chain, accuracy within your supply chain. We have stopped with a lot of supply chain optimization right now. Now it's just trying to get the product flowing through the supply chain. So as we move on, it's going to go back to that optimization. And it's going back to collaboration with the manufacturers. Right now, sharing data with the manufacturers and working together as a team, we've seen that as a true differentiator for both the retailer and the manufacturer.
Scott, do you have anything to add on what you think should be tackled next?
Yeah. First, I agree with everything that Teresa said. Secondarily, I think the retailers that are going to be really successful coming out of this are the ones that are going to move as fast as possible on both the value-based private label development, and then also how fast can you change and reset your key categories in your key stores as fast as possible to get the assortment that's going to maximize the benefit from you know, for this recession that's upcoming. How can you get the right portfolio in the key stores that consumers are going to be looking for?
Got it. So let's kind of pivot again to figuring out what we're going to look like as an industry as we come out of this. Like what is forecasting going to look like? Because, you know, we're already kind of in a muddle about the situation that we're in. I think maybe we can anticipate that a lot of that food dollar is going to stay in the home, but how much? What do we do? What's the future?
Yeah, I think the forecasting is going to have to be based on two things. One is short term, you know, what happened recently, right? Versus longer term results to be able to build that forecast out. And then the secondarily, looking at the last recession and the trends that came out of it. So those two combinations. And I would expect that you're going to hold on to a lot of the out-of-home consumption is not going to get anywhere near the 50% that it was coming in for at least the rest of this year plus longer. There's going to be a very damaging impact to a number of independent restaurants. That industry is getting hit pretty hard. And secondarily, I think it's going to take a long time for people to be very comfortable going into areas where there's a lot of other people around. And so that's going to lead to more sales for the food retailers to be able to capture in this window of time.
So how do you think it's going to impact like the types of products that we shop for? I mean, do you anticipate that because so much more of the food dollar is going to stay in the home that we're still going to be cooking from scratch? Are we going to kind of stick with our private brand purchases and maybe go up a tier as we recover economically? What are some of the things that you predict?
So I definitely think we are going to be, when this started about 3 weeks ago, there was a spike in the shelf-stable meals. I kind of feel like that's going to go back and forth with cooking on your own and then going back to these because people are going to get tired of cooking on their own. So as this moves on, though, I think you will still see some of that. You will still see people going up a tier. You will see people maybe, you know, getting more of those expensive treats and things like that again. And I think it's going to be interesting to see as we balance that, because there may be less innovation that happens than was planned, because right now many manufacturers are deferring those processes as they're just focusing on the COVID-19. So I think the manufacturers that are able to still innovate and still bring something new are going to have a distinct advantage, whether it's through private label or not, because people are going to want something new and different, because they're going to want more joy and more surprise again.
So as retailers and manufacturers, I mean, I feel that they're still kind of in a reactionary mode. You know, we've talked a lot about some of the changes that are taking place in stores at the manufacturer level. At what point are either of them able to kind of start really focusing more on the future? You know, when they maybe start thinking about adding more SKUs back into their manufacturing, or like, when do we start making some of these changes?
I think it's going to be once demand normalizes. Right now, we're still seeing fairly erratic spikes in demand. Right. Part of that's because in some of these areas we have unmet demand. Once that demand is met, so for instance, once we have paper on the shelves, but right now what we're seeing is some of these secondary items and categories which aren't deemed critical are actually getting very low in inventory. And as soon as somebody posts a picture that shows shampoo's out of stock, there could be a run on shampoo, even though there's the normal amount of inventory out there. But there's this erratic demand component right now. And so until that normalizes, it's really hard to forecast what's going to happen. And so in the near future here, this will become more of a pattern for consumers and retailers and manufacturers, and then they'll be able to create accurate forecasts from it.
So coming out of this, do you see any like clear winner or loser, you know, maybe a mid-tier retailer or an independent retailer? Some types of manufacturing, like products that are absolute winners that won't ever dip in terms of demand. What do you see out there?
I think we should both answer this, 'cause we'll probably have different answers. So for me, the clear winners are the manufacturing side, are the ones that have a very limber supply chain. The ones that have been able to quickly in the beginning step back and say, okay, I'm going to make 3 products instead of 30 products, or I'm going to run my production facility 24/7, and I have great relationships with my tier 1 and 2 suppliers, so I can get the raw goods. So those are the ones that get the product back into the retailer fastest, I think, are going to be some of the clear winners, as long as they can manage their cash to cash cycle. So Scott, what would you say?
I'd say there's a mix. I think absolutely manufacturers that are most limber in their supply chains, also retailers that are most limber in their supply chains and being able to react and predict as things happen, right? We're seeing that some food facilities are going to be shut down because of exposure to COVID for a period of time. And that creates issues within the supply chain. So those that are able to react the fastest will have wins. I also think it'll be a mix. Some of these mid-tier retailers are going to suffer and some will win depending on where they sit and how they get their allocation of products from the manufacturers. So it's a mix of things. And then who's going to win long-term are the ones that can retain the customers that they've acquired during this window of time, whether that's retailers or manufacturers. Those that can activate and retain those are going to win. Both have a huge opportunity to gain share long-term from this. And so whoever reacts the best and stays connected to those shoppers are going to win.
Absolutely. I was reading an article this weekend about a retailer that is partnering with local restaurants. And this retailer is actually bringing in some of the meals from the restaurants and selling them, and not, you know, not for profit for themselves. But I think doing things like that really creates loyalty that is going to have a long lasting impact.
I love that, because truly people, you know, they don't want to have to make every single meal in the home. And that's where we are right now. So what a great community builder that is. That's a great example. So before I wrap up, I want to ask each of you, you know, being in the supply chain, What has changed about your own purchase habits during this episode of COVID-19?
For me, in the beginning, I was really trying to make sure that I'm not hoarding, I'm not buying anything. But what I have found for myself, what has changed is maybe making larger batches of things. And a lot of that's also because my kids are at home. So I am running out of food. I have two teenage boys. So I think, instead of doing 4 chicken thighs, I'm now doing 8 chicken thighs and they're all eaten that one night. So the same frequency of trips for me, but truly getting more, but only getting more because we need to, because we're all at home now.
Right. Scott, how about you?
So similar. I've switched to a lot of click and collect. So I've done that several times through this window of time. And then some different purchases, a lot more frozen goods than I would typically purchase. And then again, being conscious of things like bath tissue and that, are not buying excessive amounts, just buying what we need to not contribute to out of stock. So those are the things that mostly, I have noticed strangely enough that I'm spending a lot less, whether it's at the grocery store or eating out or those other things, from just being isolated and not going out at throughout the week.
Interesting. Good. Well, thank you. So some of the things that we heard today is that, A, we all need to be more patient. There's a lot of product out there in the pipeline, and it is making its way to the store. That for Easter, people will still be acknowledging these important holidays, but it'll be in a much different way. No huge family meals, no neighborhood egg hunts. But hopefully there's definitely some joy out there. One of the ongoing problems really is going to be, the accuracy of assortments, because things are moving so fast. And that will be something that both retailers and manufacturers really need to work on as we emerge and kind of adjust to our new normal. That there are some great opportunities because there's a lot of new buyers out there, thanks in part to out of stocks. And it'll be up to the retailers and the manufacturers to hang on to those new buyers. And it's also a time for both of them to kind of take a look and rethink their assortment, both in terms of the variety of SKUs and what the right portfolio is going to look like for, some cash-strapped consumers as we come out of this. So I'd like to thank you both for your time today, and hopefully the next time we talk, it'll be a much rosier picture of what's happening out there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening. Please visit IRIWorldwide.com to view the IRI COVID-19 dashboard and insights portal, where you'll have access to daily updates, in-depth reports, as well as observations and implications for the CPG retail industry. Please become a subscriber of IRI Growth Insights and let us know what you want to learn more about. We'll serve it up in a future IRI Growth Insights episode. Look for us wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to review IRI Growth Insights. Also, visit us on the web at IRIWorldwide.com and connect with us on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn.